Welcome, this is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur, your Chief Sales and Profit Evangelist and your Chief Profitability Officer. Thank you for listening in. E3C, it stands for, what does it stand for? I'll tell you. It stands for Entrepreneurship, Empowerment, and Evolution. And the C stands for Connect, Collaborate, and Create. We show you how to maximize your profits and sales and business opportunities, and we teach you the best practices for profitability and sales and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. I'm a proponent of saying, if you can't sell your idea, you can't sell your product, you can't sell your service, you don't have a business. And further to say, if you cannot run your business profitably, then you won't be in business for very long. So the key point, we don't care, or you shouldn't care about as much as what your experience and background, your expertise is. You have to be an expert not only in that, but also in sales and profitability. So welcome. We want you to listen, learn, enjoy, and share. You can check out the website, Better Sales and Profits Now. That's bettersalesandprofitsnow.com. Today, we're going to talk about small business. Small business is big business, but why can't we celebrate entrepreneurship? We're going to have a special guest in a few minutes, but I want to give my opinion on some things. Small business is big business, so why can't we celebrate and support small business and entrepreneurship? Small businesses and entrepreneurs have a major impact on individuals, families, and communities. I believe that strong small business helps support our neighborhoods and communities. So what can you do? What can our community do? And what can government do? And what are the best solutions for building stronger businesses? Small business is very big business and it's very personal to me. I take small business very personally, very seriously. And small business entrepreneurs can have a major impact. They volunteer their time and expertise. They serve as leaders and role models for young and old. They donate money, schools, churches, and other community groups. And how will our young people learn the principles of free enterprise and entrepreneurship without small business and their presence in our community? Where will the part-time jobs, the apprenticeships, and internships come from? And if it were not for small business in my community, I would not have a job as an aspiring 12-year-old paperboy. I was able to make money for my mother and bring the groceries home. If I wasn't successful, we didn't eat. So for me, small business is very, very, very important. Today we're talking with Ari Reynolds, if I got that correct. Hopefully I got that correct, and he'll correct me when I bring him on. He is founder of eFactor. And you check out the website, www.efactor.com, that's www.efactor.com, which is a business community network, and they support small business, and that's what we're talking about today. Now, Ari, he's got an extensive background. He started business in 1975 as CEO and founder of MicroLife. He sold that in 1987, became founder of ICT, and then in 1991, he acquired six companies in 2 years. And now in 2004, he is founder of OHM, which is a business development company. So he's going to talk lots about that. What he does is provide technology support for growing companies and makes connections for them. So I'm happy to bring Ari on. Ari, how are you?
Fine. Thank you, Kenneth. I love your introduction. It's almost like I saw my whole life passing by.
Well, thank you for being on the program. I want to really start off by asking you, you've got extensive background in business and entrepreneurship. How did you get started?
It's at one hand, it's in the genes. Like my whole family is full of entrepreneurs, so that's one side. At the other hand, it's sometimes needs a kind of disaster before you realize that you want to start your own business. And that's what happened to me. I worked as a sales director for a software company in the early 70s, and the company went down the drain. And I thought, working for somebody else, perhaps I can do a better job doing it myself. And that's how I started in the mid-70s.
Wow, exactly. And you had a blog that I read about and responded to, and it got my attention. Before we talk about that, so you got into business in 1975, and you started the MicroLife. So what was your early experience as being an entrepreneur in small business?
Now, the first thing you experience is that you don't know anything. That's the biggest experience. You start a business, but you don't know how to structure a company. You don't know how to finance a company. So all the basics are not there. So you have to learn them by experiencing it.
It's funny, you're interesting. Now, some entrepreneurs are humble and they recognize that they don't know everything. A few entrepreneurs recognize or don't recognize that they don't know a lot. So sometimes their expertise and experience gets them in trouble thinking that they can parlay that to other efforts. So I salute you on realizing that you don't know it all. So what do you contribute to your success? Because in 1991, you acquired 6 companies in 2 years.
It's basically being with 2 feet on the ground and knowing you don't know everything, having the right team around you, the right people. Very important to create a team. It's you never do things alone. It's important to realize that, and I think you have to look very careful who you add to the team. So teamwork is the name of the game. Certainly when you grow like my last technology company from 0 to 1,000 people in 6 years, you need good people around you.
Wow. Now, did you recognize that you didn't know anything right off the bat being an entrepreneur? Or was there an experience that pointed that fact to you?
It's always an interesting factor, because the first time you are confronted with the things you don't know is when you have to talk to your bank, and the bank is putting the knife on your throat and telling you that you have to change things. And basically, that's the first time you really realize that there's a couple of things you have to learn.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so sometimes it happens naturally, and sometimes it happens externally. People bringing your shortcomings to your attention.
Oh, people this time will recognize this.
Yeah, if you can learn from other people's mistakes and experiences, that is that will save you lots and lots of money and heartache. I believe.
No, I was surprised. I did a course for the city of New York for starting entrepreneurs last year, and I did a case study on the failures I had, and after the fact, people said, "Hey, this is the first time a successful entrepreneur is telling about the failures he made, and that's where we learn the most."
Right. Absolutely. Wow. Now, you're calling us from the Netherlands. So right now it's, 5 o'clock there in the, I guess, evening or early or late afternoon. So tell us about, you're doing business in the Netherlands, and then you come over to the United States. What's that like? Or where are you at right now? I know you're talking with us, but...
Yeah, now, when I look outside, it's dark outside.
Okay.
So it's... I started my first business in the U.S. in 83, and I had my headquarters in Boston. And the first thing you learn is that you don't know anybody, and that you don't have a network. In Holland, by now I know everybody. There's hardly anybody I can't find. If I don't know them directly, then I know somebody that knows them. So that was the comfort zone I came from when I started in the U.S. And then when you start in the U.S., you know, it's very easy to get in touch with people, but it's very difficult to get in touch the second time with people. The attention span in the U.S. is much shorter than in Europe. In Europe, it takes longer to get your first apartment. But if people are interested, they keep on doing the conversation with you. In the U.S., you come out of your first meeting and everybody was enthusiastic, and you think, hey, I think I'm close to a contract. And that's probably the last time you hear from them.
I remember that. I was a consultant with Krauthammer International a few years ago, and they make fun of Americans. They call American training edutainment. And they say that American training is all about hype, and you're really excited, but after you leave the room, have you learned anything? Has it changed your behavior? Has it changed your attitude? You know, most often than not, it didn't. And the question you want to ask yourself is, and they make this point, Krauthammer, I guess I'm giving a plug for Krauthammer International, is that Americans will tell you what to do. You need to be a better communicator, a strong leader, great at sales, and providing service support for your clients. That's what to do, but that's not how to do it. And Krauthammer showed me how to do those things. So it's so important. And so there is a difference between American way of doing business and the European approach. So what has led to your success being successful in Europe and also in the United States?
I would say my main success is based on the ability to connect with people, and that makes a huge difference. If you can fall back on your network, if you have a real relationship with people you can call on, that makes a difference.
Wow, and that's part of my company. It's called E3C. The C stands for connect, collaborate, and create. So how do you make that connection with people?
Now, first of all, you have to be interested in people. It's nowadays networking is a hot topic, and suddenly everybody is a networker, and you see people going to events and big groups, and they collect cards. They are collectors. They are not connectors.
Yeah.
So concentrate, even when it's an event with a lot of people, concentrate on two or three people. Have an in-depth conversation so that people remember you when you write an email the next day. How many times have you been to an event and you collect 25, 50 cards, and you're looking the next morning at the cards, and you think, who was that? But the same happens to the guy you send an email. He's looking at the email. Who is that?
Who are you?
So, makes no sense. Have a good conversation, and if you know who is coming to the event, Google people and see what kind of interest they have, what kind of business they do, and trying to make a connection instead of exchanging business cards.
Yeah, I would agree on that. Do your homework. Do some preps if you can. And then instead of asking the question, so what business are you in, I always like to ask, besides that, how can I help you? And when you do that, and you go around and you say the same thing, you'll be able to match up people right there at that event, and you become a hero.
It's a two-way street.
I'm always last. I'm always the last person. They say, "Oh, you didn't tell me what you do." And we'll talk about that later. Well, what is it that you do, and how can I help you? And so then they're listening. When they say, "Okay, what do you do?" Now they're listening. So that's very interesting. So we've got a few things in common. Now you you have a weekly blog on the E Factor.
Yeah, I love to write about networking, connecting. Or how George Frazier calls it, click. I always love that term. And I try to take what happens during the week and translate that into my blog about networking. I also do a lot of keynotes on networking for the CIO organization or universities. My last one was at the Kelly School of Business in Indiana, of the University of Indiana. And I love it to tell young people and make them aware what networking is. I don't have a solution for it. It's not like, okay, you do these 10 steps and you are a networker. I strongly believe in making people aware what networking is and apply that to their own character. Mm-hmm. So think about it instead of somebody telling you what to do.
You have to kind of live it, and it has to be your attitude. Like, my goal is that the most important person I'm speaking with is the person I'm speaking with. It's not me. It's not about me. So my focus, my concentration is on that person. I'm not picking up the phone. If somebody calls me, I'm making direct eye contact. I'm asking them questions underneath. How did you get started? Why did you decide to go into this business? And how can I help you? Those questions that connect with a person, not on the surface, but down with, you know, why did you start your business? And so that communicates with people, hey, this person's interested in me. So that's fascinating. We've got a lot in common. Now, you have two books. You co-authored the book, The N Factor, How Networking Can Change the Dynamics of Business, and that was published in May of 2007. So what is that book all about, The N Factor?
Now, The N Factor is basically everything we learned about networking during our business life, especially when we were building our company called OHM Business Development, OHM Business Development, we came to the conclusion that networking is not a tool for us. It's our core business. Mm-hmm. And when we realized that it was core business, we thought we should write it down. We should write down what we do, how we do it, why we do it. And it's the interesting part about writing a book on networking is that you have to structure all your thoughts before you can write them down. So writing the book, we learned a lot. And that for me, that was the most interesting part. And of course, if with all the blogs, I write a blog every week on the E Factor. So with all the blogs and all the experience and all the writing that's going on, the next book will be 10 times better, of course. But the N Factor.
So that's the E Factor. The E Factor. Okay. So, and I should mention to our listeners that the N Factor is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Walmart, and other bookstores. So definitely get the N Factor. I got to get the N Factor myself. I don't have it. Now, you have this new book, The E Factor. What is that all about?
Now, The E Factor is almost ready. It's not published yet. And it's basically the experience in building businesses. We also give advice on international tax law. We give advice on viral marketing, so it's a complete book on entrepreneurship, and we have quite a few guest writers as well for very specific, more technical aspects, and we will do a lot of case studies as well to and show where things can go wrong if you don't do your homework.
Wow, okay. I can't wait to get that book. And if you need any guest contributors, let me know. I may even lend a chapter or two on that. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I'd love to have you write a book on sales.
Actually,
a chapter on sales.
I'm in the process. I have actually probably three or four chapters shy of completing the book. And I'm working on one.
Okay, I'd love to have you as a co-writer.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, so much. We're talking about entrepreneurship. All right. Now, I have you got my attention because I got an email from you from a great blog article you talked about, Networking, a New Movement. And you talked about what the the bailout in the United States, how we're bailing out the financial industry, but when it comes to small business, you know, where there's seems like there's not a focus there, and we're looking at bailing out the automotive industry. So why did you decide to write that article, and why is small business important to you?
It was quite kind of interesting because I was planning to write a totally different blog that weekend. But suddenly I woke up in the night and I was angry. I was really angry. Yeah. You know how difficult it is without a financial crisis as a small business to get a credit line from a bank. Mm-hmm. You have to give guarantees triple the amount you want to borrow, and you see many
put your house
entrepreneurs.
On the line.
Yeah, many entrepreneurs have a second or a third mortgage to finance their own business. It's hardly impossible to get normal financing, and if you're not in the business for 5 years, then it's impossible. Now we have the financial crisis, and now first of all, I think it's a shame that all these guys that messed up can walk away with those bonuses.
Absolutely.
Anyhow,
I agree.
The government bails them out for $350 billion. And the same happened in Europe, by the way. It's not a typical American problem. Mm-hmm. So governments put hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in the financial system. It's coming out nowhere. You can go to any bank, you don't get a loan.
And the government, I guess, lent them money and expecting that they would pass on the money, and so far we haven't seen anything yet.
No, and nobody knows where the money is because there's no control system either. And for years, government in Europe and the United States is telling us that the small and medium-sized businesses are the engine of the economy. The banks were telling us small and medium-sized businesses are the engine of the economy. Everybody is saying small and medium-sized businesses are our target because they're fast-growing, serious businesses.
Right.
But
they employ most of the employees, and they make the majority of the new products and services.
Yeah, and if you take the new hires, they all come from small and medium-sized businesses. And if you make the same mistakes as a small or medium-sized business as the auto industry makes or the financial industry makes, they sell your house.
Yeah. You're out of business.
You're out of business, and nobody cares. Yeah. So what made me angry is that I'm pretty sure that small and medium-sized businesses are also the biggest taxpayers because we cannot go to Washington or The Hague or London, talk to the government and say, hey, if we have to pay so much taxes, we move our headquarters somewhere else, like the big companies do, like Philips Electronics or PepsiCo or whatever. So they can make deal with the tax authorities. We can't.
Yeah, we can't move.
We can't move. We don't get money. We can't move. So it's not fair. It's just not fair. And I think in the new administration, when Obama starts his new administration, there should be a cabinet post for small and medium-sized businesses. Somebody that really cares about growing small and medium-sized businesses with guaranteed loans, with involvement in special projects like green energy, because all those projects now go to the General Electrics and the Boeings, but not to the small and medium-sized businesses. There has to be a way that these small and medium-sized businesses can participate in those programs.
Well, they have the Small Business Administration, the SBA, and the the Commerce Department. So is that they're there? Why, you know? So they got those positions. Isn't that what you're talking about? Or
no, I'm talking about active people. I'm talking. I'm not talking about. Yeah, but I'm not talking about when the president goes on a trade mission. You find the CEOs of General Electric and the CEO of Citicorp in the same group of people. But promote the small and medium sized businesses when you go to China, or when you go to France, or you go to England, instead of a car industry that's basically bankrupt.
So how do we get to this point? I think that it's easier to pick the small business because they advertise their big business, you know, Ford, GM, you know, Microsoft, Google. They're really, you can get information on them. And so that's where, I guess, journalists and government go to because they're there. What do you think? Why do they get all the support from the government?
They can afford to have departments full of people working on projects. I work 15 hours a day, Kenneth. So the problem is if the small and medium-sized businesses can unite and have somebody talk to the people in Washington or in London or in The Hague, that can make a difference. But we are busy. We are working.
We have work to do. Businesses to run.
All because right. our so, house is at stake.
A house and maybe a few other things.
like a few other things. So,
college education, retirement.
So there must be, and that was basically what I was calling for in my blog, there must be a way to unite and have one voice as small and medium-sized businesses when it comes to the lobbies and government and financial institutions.
Okay, so what can we do? We're entrepreneurs, we're small business people. What are some suggestions that that you have to correct the solution? How do we get to government?
I invite your listeners to come up with suggestions, and then I don't have a problem in bundling those suggestions and start some movement here. With the E-Factor, we have in January we have about 1 million entrepreneurs as members, so we can we can help unite those people.
Okay, 1 million. So the first thought is join E-Factor. That's www.efactor.com.
And it's free.
Join the movement. It's free. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
No. But go ahead. What is the E-Factor? So we're talking. We just introduced it. What is E-Factor?
Now, the E-Factor, when we were founding the E-Factor, Marion Rowland and Rodney Sampson in Atlanta and myself, we said it's very important to give content. And we analyzed what you need as an entrepreneur. And basically what you need is more revenue. You need to find funding. You need to find experts to ask questions. And you need to save cost. And these are the four pillars the E-Factor is built on. So although we are only 9 months old, and a lot of functionality has to come, but that's what we are building, based on those four pillars: more revenue, funding, expert advice, and cost saving. So we will come with more and more cost saving, or we have a health insurance plan that could be very attractive for members. We have a plan where you can call a doctor 24/7. We organize events with famous speakers. We have master classes on all kinds of subjects. So we try to bring content to the entrepreneur.
Oh, that's very fascinating. What's your next event or thing that you're excited about that's coming up within the next couple of months? with the E-Factor?
In January, we have an event in Chicago that where we have Pierre Everaerts as a keynote speaker, and Pierre is the honorary chairman of InBev, and they bought Budweiser, and he will talk about mergers and acquisitions.
Okay, well, that sounds exciting. So if somebody wants to join E-Factor, how do they do that?
Try again?
If they want to join E-Factor, how do they do that?
Now, when you go to efactor.com, there's a very simple way of registering, and you're a member. And when you like to use the benefits of the premium membership, it will show you what you can get for a business class membership and first class membership. In the first class membership, for example, we offer access to lounges, business lounges, where you can go to lounges all over the United States and in Europe. And instead of working in a Starbucks, you can work in a professional environment and invite customers, have lunch or dinner. And so that's what we offer in a first class membership.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. It's kind of like a business social club that you can go to and do business. Excellent.
Absolutely.
All right. So what else would you like to share about the E-Factor? I have a couple other questions about small business and what we can do. But what else would you like to share about E-Factor?
Well, what we like to do in the course of this year, and we're talking to a major network, a business network, to have our own IPTV network on the E-Factor and develop TV formats with one of the major stations.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds really exciting. We'll talk after the show. There's another. I interviewed J.C. Watts. He's launching the Black News Network, and so there might be a couple of opportunities there that we can talk about. So we talked about, for entrepreneurs, number one, they can join E-Factor. Number two is that they can put down in writing what their suggestions are, and you'll take it, and I guess as a plan of action. What about government? What should government do at the federal level if we want to support small business?
No, there's a couple of things. First of all, we need access to money, to finance. They don't have to give it to us like to the financial industry. They can. So that's a very important one. That at least we have access to money. Now we don't have access to money. Secondly, especially the paperwork surrounding small and medium-sized businesses is enormous.
Don't apply to the government program. Too much paperwork.
Yeah, so there must be a way to simplify that. And I think the government should invite small and medium-sized business entrepreneurs on a regular basis to talk and tell about the issues small and business and medium-sized businesses have, and they have to learn. It's not all the decisions should be politically driven. Mm-hmm. It's also a matter of common sense. Business.
Yeah, Ari, I mean, I would love to go after government contracts and get them involved, but it's just, yeah, give us a call. It's really great. I go to these meetings, and then you call them, and then they don't call you back. You call them again, they still don't call you back. You know, you just kind of say, okay, I need to focus on other stuff besides trying to have the government work with me, or if I have a product or service and they appear interested, but nothing ever happens. What do you think is going to change that?
There's a new president coming in.
Okay.
He used the phrase change. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I think it's important to have our voice heard in Washington and in London and in The Hague. That's the first step we should do. It's nobody listens because we have no time to go on the street and march with banners. We don't have lobbyists that can do the dirty work for us. We have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, President-elect Obama made a statement. He was on ABC News, and they confronted him on his idea of taxing, I guess, the wealthy. And the reporter said, do you realize that history shows that when you reduce the tax rates, that actually increases the tax revenue for government? And you're saying you want to increase taxes. What are your thoughts on that? And he made a comment that it's all about fairness. And I'm like, oh, he's not going to get my vote. Because, you know, we're going to keep taxing everybody, even the rich. They already pay enough in taxes. When you try to tax people, they're going to try to avoid that taxation. So why do you think that our new president's going to support small business? Maybe it's unfair for me to ask you that question, but I'm just not as confident that he is for small business. And he talks about spreading the wealth. So give me some hope. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that? You think we've got a friend in the White House now?
I think so. It's a smart man, and I think he has smart advisors. And there's one thing that they will certainly tell him, and that's how important small and medium-sized businesses are. I'm absolutely sure. And I don't think that he has the ties with the big corporates that the current president has. And I think he is more open-minded than in that respect than the current president is. So yeah, for me there's still hope.
Okay, well I won't give up hope, I guess. Now, what about communities? What can let's talk about state and local governments. What could they do to encourage entrepreneurship?
Now, what I've seen in New York, but also in Amsterdam, is that that local government is doing a lot of creating facilities for starting entrepreneurs, doing courses, creating real estate space to start your business, bringing experts in. I think that especially local governments, like in Atlanta or in Dallas, can do a lot in facilitating starting entrepreneurs and accepting the fact that not every entrepreneur will succeed the first time. Secondly, and that's where we can help as well, is you can invite companies from other countries or other continents to come to your city and see if they can find partners to create alliances or joint ventures and that can go vice versa. That way you can meet people from Amsterdam and you can find a partner in Amsterdam selling for you in Europe, or find a partner from London. So an exchange between entrepreneurs, and that can be facilitated by a local government or business schools even.
Uh-huh. How do we help local, I guess, local state government, even to the federal government? How can we hold them accountable?
I think you vote for them.
We vote for them. Okay, vote them out.
Yeah.
All right, so...
If you vote for the right, the wrong person, you cannot expect anything from them. So you can use the Chamber of Commerce, you can use the business school, and you have to bring parties together and have them work together to make it happen.
Wow.
At the end, local government is interested in creating jobs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so your angle, selling it to the local government, should be creating jobs. And whether you facilitate starting entrepreneurs or you bring in entrepreneurs from other countries or cities, it's all about creating jobs.
Wow. I'm really excited to talk with you. This has been a very interesting conversation. I have,
but the same what I say about local governments is valid for churches as well. Through my my colleague and friend Rodney Sampson, I met many bishops in Atlanta and California, and I think the church can play a very important role there as well.
Wow, which leads into my other question about community. So churches, what do you see as the possibility there, the potential there of churches in our community and supporting small business?
Now, first of all, small businesses is a certain percentage of every community. And what I suggested to one of the bishops in the Northeast was to, as a church, create a small fund, almost like a venture fund, where you can provide seed money, as long as you do it professionally. Yeah, but seed money is the most difficult money to get these days.
Right.
It's easier to find 100 million than to find 100,000. And if the church is able to create a fund with a couple of million, 2 million, where you can provide seed money, seed capital, say 100,000 per promising venture, you can serve 20 companies. And when they start flying, there's other professionals out there that can do the rest of the money. But the seed money is very important. And I think that a church will benefit with when they have a prosperous community.
And Grameen Bank, I guess the guy, I can't remember his name, but he's got a PhD, and he's got the micro-lending program, and his program is organization loan money to poor and people and to help them start their businesses. And that's what we should do in our communities in the United States, and we're lacking that.
Absolutely.
That's a very good idea. Wow, okay. Well, we're running out of time, but I wanted to, as we wrap up, tell us again what the eFactor is all about. And if people want to join, how to do that. Again, you can check out the eFactor at eFactor.com. That's eFactor.com. And again,
it's eFactor.com.
The eFactor, what is the mission, vision, and organization? What's the eFactor all about, and how do people join you?
It's a platform, a social network for and by entrepreneurs. So it's not only us putting all the content and all everything up. We also ask our members to contribute to the platform. So we have 1,000 things we can help entrepreneurs with, but we can never match the million entrepreneurs helping each other. So we try to be the platform where people can help each other.
There's other social business networks. You've got Facebook, you've got LinkedIn, you've got there's some others. So what makes the eFactor so unique?
Now everybody has a place in under the sun. But if you talk about Facebook, you talk about MySpace, Plexo, it's more generic. It's sending each other messages. What we try to do with the eFactor, and I think we are very successful doing that, is creating a niche social network, a niche for entrepreneurs, where it's all about content. So yes, you can connect with each other, because that's the number one in a social network, but in our niche, we add content. As I said before, it's about helping our members to get more revenue, to find funding, to find the experts, and save costs. And you find that in no other network, because they have a totally different purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well said. All right. So, Ari, I can't let you go without you telling us about the other company, because the eFactor is one initiative. and your other company is, what is it, OHM Development? What is that
OHM.
All about?
OHM.
What does that company do? Okay.
OHM is 4 years old and is based on the experience the founders, Marion, Roland, and I have in building technology companies. And one of the things we learned over the years is the fact that many entrepreneurs in technology know how to build software, for example, but they have a very little clue about how to sell it. And we still see people that think that if they build the best product, the buyers will come automatically. That's not the case.
Yeah.
So what we do is we leverage our very high-level contacts in the Fortune 1500 companies, and we help the technology companies get to the right people in those organizations. Now, we have served over the years about 250 companies, mostly from Silicon Valley, from Texas, from the Northeast, from Israel, from France. And we bring them into the Fortune 1500, and very successfully. And so far, about one-third of the introductions lead to a contract for them.
Oh, that's impressive. That's really impressive. Wow. So if somebody's interested in doing business with this company, OHM, how do we contact you?
You just send me an email, Adri, A-D-R-I-E, at efactor.com, and we take care of it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Excellent. And what other things would you like to share with us about your company, OHM?
No, it can be a shortcut to where you want to be, and especially in this time of say the financial crisis, you need to sell. That's priority number one, is selling. And with the with a regular sales force, it's not always possible to shorten the sales cycle. And with OHM, we are able to shorten the sales cycle for you. Instead of spending 3 months to get to the right people, we skip that part and we start with the right people. And that's the main value of OHM.
Okay. It's because the old school marketing of picking up the phone, calling, you get a voicemail. You send an email, it goes to spam, probably, or never gets deleted. You put an ad in the newspaper, the radio, TV, nobody, skips over it. They've got Sirius Radio XM. People don't read the ads in the newspaper, magazines, and they have TiVo, so they skip over the ads on TV. And so you've got to find a way to make connections with people. And the new way of doing it is certainly one of the things that you're doing, introducing people to. So as we wrap up, what would you like our listeners to learn and understand from this conversation that we just had?
For me, the most important is that you stay positive. Don't listen to many people with bullshit. Follow your own destiny. Create your own destiny, and connect with people.
Well said. Well said. And your website for OHM is OHM. What is it? www.OHM what?
OHM Business Development, oneword.com.
Okay. OHM Business Development.com. All right.
That's it.
All right, so thank you very much. So that's the show. Want to find out what did you get out of this? What specific steps, what did you learn today? And how will you apply what you've learned? Specifically, what action steps will you implement to improve your business and your sales and increase profitability? Don't forget to check out on iTunes. You can go to Business Podcast and enter E3C, the Passion Entrepreneur. Tell a business associate, tell a friend, relative about the show. They'll be happy that you did. And we do offer free consultation to people that call. Ari, so thank you so very much for lending your expertise and your wisdom, the many years of business that you've had. I'm looking forward to working with you. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, And if there's anything, you listen to me, if there's anything I can do to help you in what you're doing, I'm looking forward to working with you in the future.
I'm looking for you in Atlanta next month, Kenneth. And thank you for having me.
All right. So anyway, that's the show. Thank you so very much. And we'll talk with you real soon. And as I end, I always like to say, dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary, stay profitable, and go make that sale.